you very much, Rabbi Glicksberg, for the invitation. Thank you all for joining. And it really is a pleasure to be with you virtually. I was mentioning, I have so many friends, so many close friends in Chashma Naim. I was mentioning to one of them the other day, Michael Cherish, that it's been a long time since I've had a chance to share Torah directly with the community. Once upon a time, I used to be invited. I used to be there in person many times. Jeremy would invite me. Michael would invite me. But I realized it's not because you guys like me less, I don't think, I hope. The reason is because in the last few years, the Torah resources in Chashma Naim have exploded. And you guys are now blessed with so much talent, not only in Glenwood, but now Baruch Hashem with Rabbi Glicksberg for the whole yeshuv. I met Rabbi Glicksberg a number of years ago when I was visiting the community in Johannesburg as a scholar in residence. Rabbi Glicksberg, I'm sure, recalls it was a Shavuos, which was actually very, very painful for his community. And it was a very, very difficult time. A young boy died on Erev Yontif. It was not an easy time to be a visitor, but it was definitely not an easy time to be the Rav. But I was so impressed then with not only his unbelievable scholarship and his learning, but also his sensitivity and his human, kind, and sensitive touch. And when I heard that he had been appointed the Rav of Chashma Naim, I said to myself, "Oy, I'll never forgive myself for not thinking of it first. What a shidduch, what a shidduch, what a perfect shidduch, such a wonderful community with such a wonderful Rav." So I wish all of you together, even though I don't get any credit for this one, even though I knew many of you and I knew Rabbi Glicksberg and I should have thought of it, but I didn't. So I give all of you a bracha that you should continue under the incredible leadership of your esteemed Rav and the wonderful, wonderful people. A great Rav deserves a great kehillah, and a great kehillah deserves a great Rav. And Chashma Naim now has both, and I wish you all a lot of hatzlacha. I understand my task, if you will, or my mission, is to speak a little bit about the situation, in part from my perspective as the director of Tzalash, as well as Hanukkah, and to hopefully try to wrap that up into something somewhat seamless. My heart is broken, and my heart is completely full. That profound paradox, those are not my words. Less than 2 hours ago, I was on the phone with Jennifer Ehrli from Ramat Beit Shemesh, who undoubtedly you recognize the name even if you don't know her personally. Just a few weeks ago, her son Binyamin, Hashem Yimkom Damo, was killed in Gaza. Before we moved to our current community, we were neighbors and close friends with the Ehrlis, wonderful, wonderful family. And if you followed any of her even public pronouncements or actions during the Shiva, you're not surprised by her profound emuna and the depth of her feeling. But I feel like even though her situation is obviously extreme and unique, and the Mesiras Nefesh that she and her family are going through, the pain that they're experiencing, but the way she formulated it, I think really on some level expresses how we're all feeling and the experiences we've all had over these last 2 months. Our heart is broken, and at the same time, our heart is full. We've had the depths of pain, and at the same time, there's been so much that's given us chizuk, pride, and encouragement. Looking back over the last 2 months is painful and it's complicated, but it's also complicated to look forward. Not only because none of us know exactly how and when this will end, what will be once Tzahal has their definitive victory that we're all praying for. What's Hanukkah going to be like? How do we celebrate what is usually one of the most joyous times in Israel under the cloud of war, of death? Do we celebrate? How should we celebrate? The last 2 months have been, for all of us, especially those of us who have children or other family members who are soldiers, filled with anxiety, fear, sadness, and exhilaration, and joy. Just this week, again, for example, in my own family, in Baruch Hashem, Bli'ayin and Hara, my children are safe and well. But my middle son, Yosef, 21 years old, he's in an intelligence unit in the north, and he came home this week because he had two funerals in one day. Is that normal? And those were his fourth and fifth friends from yeshiva to die in the last 2 months. Of those boys in particular, one of them was his Chavruta Bogeret, his older Chavrusa when he was a first-year Talmud in Yeshivat Yerucham. Someone who he referred to as Hadugma Ishit Sheli, his role model. And he had to rush home from the north to make two funerals. How is that normal for anyone, let alone a 21-year-old? He's broken, and by extension, it's his parents who can't help as much as we're trying. What can we do? What can we say? We're broken. And that's one story among hundreds, if not thousands. This morning, I spent between driving and actually being with soldiers about 6.5 hours going to the north visiting soldiers, bringing them Sifrei Chizuk, Sifrei Limud, one of the recent initiatives of Talash. We've had the zchus of publishing Svarim of Rav Asher Weiss, specifically for Chayalim. And I actually brought some of those Svarim, as well as other things, to Chayalim in the north. And between the two-hour drive there, the hour and a half, 2 hours with Chayalim, another 2 hours coming back, over 6 hours. But I did use a little personal privilege to make one of my stops to visit my son and his unit, my other son, Yaakov. And as you know, if you have children in the army, you know their mission and instructions are often changing on a dime. And even though he thought he was about to come home as a miluimnik maybe for a month, they just changed things. And not only is he not coming home for a while, they just moved him. I spoke to him right before I got on the Zoom. He's now 1 kilometer from the Lebanon border. And someone asked me what base is he on. I had to do my best not to laugh. There are no bases there. He's not even in a motzav. He's not in a converted high school or ulam sport. He hopes he'll have a tent for the next 10 days. So what he's going to do about the cold, the rain, the halachic shaila, can he light candles? Should he light candles? How does he light candles? He has no bias. Again, this is kleinikait or pachim ketanim, if I could use a Hanukkah metaphor, compared to what other people and other families and other soldiers are going through. But it's all real. And it's all something, and all of us have our own story directly and vicariously through our children, our friends, and our relatives. Something struck me this year. It's nothing new in a sense, but you know, context provides a clarifying lens. And certainly this is the first experience I've had going into a Hanukkah, being in an act of war. And it struck me as something really surprising, which is that we say, and we know this in part of Al HaNisim. We thank Hashem not only for the Nisim and the Chuos, Val HaGvuros, Val HaMilchamos. We thank Hashem for Milchama. We will do this every time we daven on Chanukah, every time we bench. Al HaNisim, not only on the Niflos, not only on the Chuos, not only on the Gvuros, but the Nusach Ashkenaz, we say Al HaMilchamos. Now the truth is, there are other Nuschaot, Al HaNechamot, Al HaNiflaot, but we say Al HaMilchamot. What is the pshat? I admit, I'm embarrassed. How many hundreds of times, thousands of times in my life have I said this? But only now did it really hit me how bizarre it is. What does that mean to daven and thank Hashem for the Milchamot? So when you look around a lot, I realize that even though I never thought of it before, but Baruch Hashem, many of our great Parshanim did think about it. So Rav Yaakov Emden in his Siddur says, we're thanking Hashem for fighting the war with us. We're not happy about war, but we thank Hashem for being part of the war and fighting with us. That's in his commentary to the Siddur. The Sfas Emes has a different answer, that in each milchama, we take a certain koach, something is revealed about Am Yisrael, something is developed in Am Yisrael, and we'll be able to take that with us to the next war, because all of human history is one big war, in essence, he says, and therefore, we'll need it for the next time, and therefore we thank Hashem al milchamot because we'll learn things, we'll develop skills that we'll be able to take with us for the next time. I saw something very interesting, hard a little bit to experience or to accept, but very powerful in the drushos of the Chasam Sofer. He gives a different answer. That really, really, he says, in order to be worthy of Hashem's blessings, there has to be some level of suffering. And therefore he says the pain makes us ra'oi for the bracha. And therefore, yes, there's pain in the milchamot, but we thank Hashem for it because it's through the milchamot that we end up receiving Hashem's bracha. He doesn't make this connection, but it reminded me of something that I once saw years ago. If I remember correctly, it might have been in Rav Schwab's commentary to the Chumash. Oh, no, I'm sorry, it was Rav Zevin. I believe it was Rav Zevin in L'Torah L'Moadim. He points out a similar idea about the Karban Toda. He says that's why the Karban Toda is the only one of the Karbanos that has chametz mixed with the matzah. Because in essence, we're acknowledging that the tzara that led to the Yeshua is a little bit our fault. There was a little bit of chametz in there. And then there is the Yeshua. And he points out that in the nusach of the bracha that we say when we have a salvation, the Birkat HaGomel, we have a very bizarre nusach. Again, something that many of us have said many times without thinking about it. Right? Shegmalani kol tov. Right? We say, HaGomel l'chayavim tovot. What does that mean, l'chayavim tovot? So said Rav Zevin, it's the same idea. That we're really our chayav. That we had a tzara. It's not a coincidence that Birkas HaGomel, you don't say it's stam. If you just win the lottery, you don't say Birkas HaGomel. You just get a promotion, you don't say Birkas HaGomel. The examples in the Mishnah and the Halacha Birkas HaGomel, says Rav Zevin, always require a preceding tzara. Then there was a Yeshua. That's Chayavim Tovot. So that's very similar to what Chasam Sofer says about Al HaNisim. Al HaMilchamot. If it wouldn't be for the Milchamot, if it wouldn't be for the tzara, we wouldn't be Roy, we wouldn't experience the blessing. So this is three or four ideas that I found in some of the Achronim. But I wanted to suggest, I think in light of our experience, I wanted to suggest, I don't know if it's my own answer, maybe someone else has said it, but I wanted to suggest and really emphasize a different point, really. And something that jumped out at me and I think really speaks to our experience, not only in this war, not only as citizens of Israel, in many, if not all of our cases, parents and grandparents of Chayalim, but also citizens of the state of Israel living in the year that we live in, the experience that we're living in. And that is that I think, at least for me, when I say Al HaNisim starting tomorrow night, and I say those words Al HaMilchamot, I won't just be thinking about what happened with the Yevanim. I will absolutely be thinking about what's going on now. And I will be thanking Hashem for the privilege to fight. There was in the time of the Greeks, there was in between, and there is now, and there always will be, until the full Geula, evil, bad people, people doing lots of things. But only in various points in history were the Jewish people armed and equipped to stand up to that evil, to stand up to our enemies. And this is a privilege. Well, of course we wish we didn't have it. Of course we wish there wasn't evil. We wish October 7th never happened, obviously. But given that it did, Al HaNisim, Al HaNiflot, Al HaGvorot, Ve'Al HaMilchamot, we have the privilege to fight for the good. You know, there's two reasons why a nation or a people wouldn't fight. One, potentially, would be a lack of will. If I'm not mistaken, it was the famous John Stuart Mill who once said, war is an ugly thing, but not the ugliest of things. The decayed and degraded state of moral and patriotic feeling, which thinks nothing worth a war, is worse. I think it's a very profound insight. There are certain people who don't go to war, not because of some virtue, but they don't care about anything enough that they think is worth fighting for. And Am Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael, across the spectrum, religious and political, understood instantly what needs to be done. The Achdus is not just out of a sense of brotherly love, as important as that is. The Achdus that we're seeing that is unprecedented in our lifetimes is not only a unity of brotherhood, it's a unity of purpose. The overwhelming majority of, certainly of Israelis, are in absolute agreement, something that is shocking, as we know, for this country, about what needs to happen in terms of the ultimate and decisive victory. So there is an unbelievable sense of will to fight. But that's not always enough. Sometimes you don't have the ability to fight. And that is something that we can say, Hodu Hashem Ki Tov, in our generation, in Medinat Yisrael, we do have the ability to fight back. And this brings me to another idea about Hanukkah, which I think will really, I hope, sharpen this point. The Gemara, very famously, Masechet Shabbos, Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, asks the question, my Hanukkah. As Rashi explains, what is the miracle upon which the holiday of Hanukkah is based? And the Gemara goes on to give the story, which we're all familiar with, we've learned since we're little kids, about the Nes Pach Shemen, and how the Jewish people in a ragtag army somehow liberated the Beis HaMikdash. There was only one pure jug of oil, and a miracle happened. And as a result, even though it only had enough oil for one day, it lasted 8 days. The Maral in the Chedushi Agoros on that Gemara asks a very famous and very cogent question. What happened to the war? The Gemara asks, my Hanukkah, and the only answer it gives is about the jug of oil. It never mentions anything about the ragtag army, the Rabim Biad Ma'atim. That whole story is completely omitted from the Gemara. It's shocking, really. So there are a number of answers to this question, but the Maharal's answer is, Ein Hachinami, The main reason we celebrate Hanukkah is because we are celebrating the decisive victory in the war and the religious freedom that that war enabled. However, says the Maharal, so incisively, and so insightfully, I should say, the nature of war, even a successful one, is that even at the moment and certainly over time, it is easy to be blurred and not see the Yad Hashem. Our vision is blurred. It's easy to explain away what happened. Just like there are people who can explain somehow rationally what happened during the Six-Day War, even though it's obviously a miracle if you're a believer, people were able to explain away the Rabban Biad Ma'atim. They could explain away what the Chashmonaim did. It wasn't an obvious miracle. And therefore said the Maharal, Chazal were worried. Hashem was worried in a sense. And therefore, at the end of that military victory, to put a bow on top, to put a cherry on top, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made one more miracle. The Neis Pach Shemen, which was obviously Lamala Min Ateva, obviously came from Hashem. But says the Maharal so profoundly, and this is something that so many of us miss, the purpose and the ultimate telos of Hanukkah is not to celebrate the Pach Shemen. It's a mistake. The purpose of the Pach Shemen is to sensitize us to the Yad Hashem in the military victory. That Kadosh Baruch Hu was with our soldiers, I mean the Chashmonaim. He was a bunch of yeshiva bachrim, a bunch of kohanim, ragtag, right? I'm not an archaeologist, but it wasn't that far from you guys, right? Somewhere around there, or at least in Modi'in they think it was, I think, right? Anyway, that is the real nace that we're celebrating. That's what had real consequences. Yes, a miracle of Pach Shemen, no, a miracle. It didn't change Jewish life, one way or the other. The victory and the religious freedom and renaissance that was possible, the return of sovereignty to the land of Israel, as the Rambam describes, for hundreds of years, that was only possible because Hashem made a miracle with what? With an army, with a military victory. Al ha-milchamos. This Maharal works beautifully with the idea that we're describing and suggesting from the Al HaNisim. And another point, which I think can be a kind of a smach, if not a complete raya, hochacha for this idea that I'm suggesting. And that is the most famous question, not only in Hanukkah, but the most famous question in all of Torah literature. The Beis Yosef's question of why is Hanukkah 8 days? If there was enough oil for one day, so the miracle really was only a 7-day miracle. Therefore, the holiday should be a 7-day holiday. When I was a kid, and I thought that Beis Yosef was trying to take away one day of vacation from me, I was very resentful. Now I got older, I'm still a little bit, you know, would have been upset about the lack of vacation. Who wants 7 if you can have 8 days? More donuts. I mean, my gosh. But the good news is that the Beis Yosef himself suggests 3 answers to the question. And I think I once saw a sefer that had over 400 answers to that question. Unquestionably, the most popular question in all of Torah literature, certainly about Hanukkah, but really probably beyond. For our purposes, I want to emphasize only one of those 400 plus answers. The answer of the Pri Chadosh. Pri Chadosh is one of the preeminent poskim in the Achronim, commentary printed in the back of every standard Shulchan Aruch, says the Pri Chadosh Ein Achinami. The miracle of the oil only deserves and only needs a 7-day commemoration. But Hanukkah is an 8-day holiday because the first day, the tone setter, tomorrow night, the first day of Hanukkah, we're celebrating not the Pach Shemen. We're celebrating the military victory. Al ha-milchamos. So this idea of the Pri Chadosh emphasizing the fact that the first day, the tone setter of Hanukkah, is supposed to be about the military victory. The suggestion of the Maharal that the real miracle that was really important for Hanukkah was not the Pach Shemen, but was the milchama. The Pach Shemen is just a way to get us not to lose sight of the miracle of the milchama. These two very important ideas from Gedolei Achronim, the Maharal, and the Pri Chadosh, I think both support the answer that I'm suggesting for how we, at least this year, can truly internalize and with extra kavana say Al HaNisim. Not only Al HaGvuros, Al HaChuos, but Al HaMilchamot. What a privilege we have for one of the, you know, for most of Jewish history. Most of Jewish history, just look at Tanakh. Most of Jewish history, Jewish people did not have sovereignty living in Eretz Yisrael. For reasons that are beyond any one of us in the Shir, we happen to be living in one of those rare periods of history. Asher Shezachinu. And we have not only the right, but the privilege to be able to defend ourselves, to defend Eretz Yisrael. And not only that, I don't need to get too political. I think we all understand. We're defending Western civilization. We're defending civilized, we're defending humanity. You know, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was 1967, after the Six-Day War, maybe, you know, that Eric Hoffer, the famous long-share philosopher in America, said, "I have a premonition that will not leave me. As it goes with Israel, so it will go with all of us." Eric Hoffer said that in 1967, and I think anyone with any insight would say the same thing now. And this is the same thing, whether it's President Herzog or Prime Minister Netanyahu, they both made this point, and I think they're both clearly correct. As goes with Israel and Hamas, goes all of civilization, goes the whole Western world. This is not just about us. But we have the zechus, fate, hashkacha, has chosen us to be the tip of the spear, to live at a time and to be capable of fighting one of the great battles of human history, of truly good against truly evil. It's not easy. It is painful. There are horrible, horrible sacrifices. And yet it is an incredible, incredible schus. When the news of the horrors of the Holocaust in Europe truly, truly reached the ears of the nascent Yishuv that was living at the time in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, there was a big asifa. And one of the primary speakers was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Chevron, the Chevron of Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Cheskel, or known as Rabbi Cheskel Sarna. We have a copy of his speech. And one of the comments he made then was that one of the things that made the Churban so terrible, that made the Chil Hashem of the Churban HaBayis that much worse, is that the Jews didn't fight back. He wasn't criticizing them for it. They couldn't fight back. They didn't have an army. But that was the point. The fact that you could have people come in, destroy the Beis HaMikdash, exile our people, and we don't have an army, we can't fight back, that adds to the pain. That adds to the Churban. It adds to the Chil Hashem. And said Rav Cheskel Sarna, during the Holocaust, yes, we went like sheep to the lamb to the slaughter. He didn't say it chas v'shalom as a criticism. What was Eastern European Jewry supposed to do? He wasn't criticizing them. That would be silly. That would be only someone with a horrible agenda could do such a thing. But on the other hand, he acknowledged the obvious. If someone's trying to kill you and you can't fight back, that's far more humiliating. That's far more degrading. And it increased, he said, the Chil Hashem and the pain of the Churban. Baruch Hashem, now we do have an army. Now we have a powerful army, a mighty army. Clearly not a perfect one, or else we wouldn't be having this conversation. Incredible intelligence apparatus. Clearly not as good as they thought they were, or else we wouldn't be having this conversation. But nevertheless, we have so much to be proud of in that realm, and most importantly, because we have the schus to use these kelim that Hashem has given us, l'man ha-tov, for Eretz Yisrael, for Am Yisrael, and simply for the good. Rabbi Glicksberg made reference to my work with the army, and therefore, I'm sure like he does in his way, me and mine, I have a tremendous affinity and spend a lot of time studying a lot of the halachos that relate to soldiers. Hilchot Tzava. Now, at this point, you can fill up many bookshelves with svarim of that style, of that genre. But if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Glicksberg is a great scholar, so maybe he'll tell me I am mistaken. But if I'm not mistaken, of the tens, if not hundreds, of similar such svarim that have been printed in the last 75 years, I believe the first one came out, it was either 1948 or 49, and it was a sefer called Mishpat HaTzava BeYisrael. The author, interestingly enough, was an American Ole. His father was a Rosh Yeshiva in Chicago and Skokie. Regensburg, if I'm not mistaken, was his last name, and he was a Talmud, I believe, in Merkaz Harav. And he published a sefer called Mishpat HaTzava BeYisrael, 1948, maybe it was 49. Now you have tens of such svarim. In our generation, everyone loves Rav Rimon's svarim, but this is decades before, the first one. And it was a chiddush atzum. After 2,000 years of no one having to pasken any shilas about army and halacha because there was no army, all of a sudden now we had a Jewish army, unprecedented. Where do you look for such answers? Had to create an entire genre of Jewish literature, Kimat Yesh Me'ayin. And in that sefer, there's a haskama from Rabbi Pesach Frank. And I want to read you the last lines of that haskama. It's unbelievable. It's breathtaking. And Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who was one of the Gedolei Hador, unquestionably, the Rav of Yerushalayim, he first speaks about the tremendous zchus of having a Medina. Shezachinu liros b'hanetz, netz hakamas, hatzva Yisraeli, hitchadsha, shetkonana, b'masa nisim nifloim, and we're so privileged, and now we have this, and now he's talking about all these beautiful things. He talks about, of course, the terrible darkness of the Holocaust, pitom mitoch hachoshech, v'arafel, hakaved, shekiset ein haaretz, all of a sudden now we have nitzotzei or, all of a sudden there's a shachar that's Allah, ashmer tzeinu, and then he talks about how incredible it is that we have a Medina, Haramat Keren Yisrael, Enei Goyim, we came off the mat, we have a Medina Yisrael, we didn't just go into the dustbin of history like the Goyim thought would happen to us. And then he says, we got rid of the enemies, Ruach HaKadim, Naset, Tzar, HaTzorer, Me'artzeinu, Umemshela Yisrael, he continues, Mitrakemet, Mitchazeket, Be'ezer Tzur Yisrael, V'goalo, the Medina continues to develop, to get stronger, to get wealthier, to more sophisticated, Miyom Liyom, every day it's getting stronger and better, Achihiganu lakamat sabab Yisrael ashayada asa Hashem tshua gedola v'nimtzu rabim biyad ma'atim. In other words, what he's saying is everything about having Medina is a miracle. Everything about having Medina is a kiddush Hashem. But he says it crescendos. It's not static. Just having the Medina, just surviving. Now we're thriving, says Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. You can only imagine what he would say now about Startup Nation. This was in the early 40s, late 40s. But then he says, as it crescendos, the Kiddush Hashem gets greater. What's the climax? What's the sea of the Kiddush Hashem? That we have an army. That there's a Tzahal. That's an extra layer, says Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, of Kiddush Hashem, of Gilui Shechina in this world. That we can fight back. We wish we didn't need it. We wish we wouldn't have to use it. But given that until the world is redeemed, in the unredeemed world that we live in, there is evil. So Baruch Hashem now, Asher Shezachinu, that we have the ability, Laman Hashem, to be able to fight back. This is a Kiddush Hashem. This is a Zechus the Jews didn't have for centuries. It's Gvuros, it's Chuos, but yes, we say Al HaMilchamot. We thank Hashem for giving us the ability and the privilege to be able to fight back. And therefore, at least for me, Hanukkah, and particularly Al HaNisim this year, will take on added significance. If I can indulge your time for a few more minutes, I think I have. I just want to end the conversation by shifting my comments specifically to everyone who's here part of the Shir, and that is a community of Olim. Everything I said until now, if I would have said it in Hebrew, could be for any Israeli. But I want to specifically speak about our community, the community of American Olim, and if I can be more presumptuous, the community of Tzioni, Torani, religious Zionist, Olim. It would be totally reasonable to look back on the events of the last 2 months and so many different things we've experienced with great pain and perhaps be filled with some level of regret. After all, if we had stayed in Teaneck, if we had stayed in Chicago, if we had stayed in London, if we had stayed, who knows where, Johannesburg, we wouldn't be dealing with this. We wouldn't have to send our children off to the army. We wouldn't be worrying about people 21 not coming home. All the horrible, horrible things that we've had to experience and think about. Perhaps we would be regretful, Nebuch, of our experience. In many ways, I could understand it. Even if you dial it down a little bit and you expand the conversation, I don't need to tell you, and now is not the time and the hour's late, and we'd need a whole different sicha about this, but it's not so simple to raise children in our community now. Even before the war, the nisyonut, the number of kids who find high school a challenging period, the army a challenging period religiously, post-army a challenging period, not so simple, not so simple. I had the conversations with many people in my community and in yours and in many others. You know, if we had stayed where we were, if we had still been in Bergenfield, if we would still be in Los Angeles, if we'd still be in Boca, would my children be this way, that way? These are real and raw questions. Sometimes even painful ones. And again, the broader issue is not our agenda tonight. But I think if we would just ask the question in light of the war, I think it's a fair question we have to ask. And I think, at least to me, what speaks to me and what's been giving me chizuk over the last 2 months is a comment I saw a few weeks ago in the Nesivo Shalom, the famous Slonim Rebbe, in his opening piece on Parshas Chayesara. I won't get into the whole Dvar Torah on the Parsha. It's too late for that. But the upshot, he said, bases on our davening that we say every night in Mariv, where we ask Hashem, V'haser Satan milifaneinu o me'achareinu. We ask Hashem, please, to remove the Satan or the Yetzirah from before us and from behind us. What does that mean? Satan milifaneinu o me'achareinu. So he says something so beautiful, so insightful. He says, the Satan milifaneinu is that Yetzirah, that voice inside of us, before we do the right thing or avoid the wrong thing. Milafaneinu, before the big episode. We're tempted to maybe be a little bit less than honest in business. We're tempted to maybe not be as makbid as we should be on Shabbos. Or maybe we know it's not a good hashkacha, but we're on vacation, so come on. I wouldn't dress this way at home, but vacation is different. And come on, kashrus is all politics, so I don't have to worry about the hashkacha. And I'm on my phone and a certain thing shows up. I could look at it, but I know I shouldn't. What do I do right then? That's Satan milifaneinu. And it takes a lot of Mesiras Nefesh and Gvura to overcome that and hopefully do the right thing. And we know we're, since none of us are perfect, we don't always do the right thing. But then we ask Hashem, also V'hasar Satan me'achareinu, from behind us. What does that mean, says the Nesiv HaShalom? After we've done the right thing, we were honest in business, we did the right thing in Kashrus, in Tznius, in whatever the scenario is. Then, says the Nesiv HaShalom, human nature is, there's a second, subsequent Yetzara. We regret having done the right thing. I didn't take the shortcut in business on my taxes, but I see my neighbor who maybe did, and he's got an extra car and a new car, and he always goes on fancier vacations or Pesach programs than me. I regret not maybe being a little bit more aggressive in my accounting practices. Or, you know what? Come on, it would have been good if I had just eaten that food. It would have been so delicious. That lustful thought I had, if I had just acted on it. I didn't. I did the right thing, but I'm regretful. I regret the pleasure that I forsook. That's Satan me'achareinu. Says the Nesiv HaShalom, we have to daven. That's a big Yetzirah also. Not just to do the right thing, but to be proud we did the right thing, not regret it. Do the right thing without regret. That's its own nisayon. That's its own gvura that needs Hashem's help. Now, I think every example I gave, and many I didn't even imagine, you can easily imagine for yourself in your own life, we all have our nisayonot. Hopefully we do the right thing, and hopefully we don't regret it either. But it struck me over the last 2 months that a perfect example of this is Aliyah. Everybody who's part of this shir had a Satan milafaneinu. We had a Yetzirah, we had reasons, and people, voices in our own head, and voices speaking to us, often the people we love the most, trying to tell us not to make Aliyah, it's not a good idea, it's a mistake, a lot of reasons not to do it. Anyone who made Aliyah, I am sure of it, had to overcome on some level a Satan milafaneinu. Some people it was a little Yetzirah, some people it was a huge Yetzirah, but if you're here, that means you overcame it. But the question now is, do we have a Satan me'achareinu? Are we ever filled with regret about the decision? Is it a mistake? I'm not asking objectively, Mr. Rosen. I'm saying subjectively, psychologically, we have to be on guard for the fact that those thoughts can creep into our head. It's actually natural, especially in a time of great pain, especially in a time of crisis. And of course, the answer is not at all. I mean, I think, again, I have tremendous rachmanos, and we should all have empathy for the terrible things that our fellow Jews are going through outside of Israel. But perhaps that's part of the plan. Right? As bad as we've had in some of the experiences since Simchas Torah, can anyone truly look at London and say, I wish I was there? Are you kidding me? You wish you were in Los Angeles now? Chicago, Boca, Teaneck, Lawrence, even Woodmere or Boca, would you want to be there now? I have a good idea. I really, you see some of the things that are going on, the testimony of some of those college presidents and so many million other examples. I think that American and other world, they need chizuk from us. What do you say we go on a mission together? Let's go on a chizuk mission. Let's collect duffel bags. We're going to get sandwiches and boots, and we're going to bring it all to America. You know how much chizuk they would need to live there now? How lucky are we? Ashreinu matavachinu. You would feel safer on the streets of New York City than you feel in Yerushalayim? I'm not just saying this as an act of piety or an act of faith. Empirically, where would you rather be? Ashrei shezachinu. Regretting the decision? I feel more proud about my decision, Aliyah, now than at any point in the last 14 years. Now, again, it's easy for me to say I come from a place of privilege. My children, Bli Ayin Hara, poo, poo, poo a million times, are okay. But guess what? When I was speaking to Jen Early just, again, early today, again, she's a gibor, but she said to me unequivocally, she said something similar at the funeral for those who heard her hesped. Many of us, including me, were standing in that pouring rain for 2 hours on that sad day. But she repeated it to me in different words just now on the phone. She said to me unquestionably, I have no regrets. If I could do it all over again, I would do the exact same thing. Of course, she said, she's obviously devastated about what happened to her son. But she doesn't regret the decision, not Aliyah, not having her kid in the army, Binyamin, for 1 second, she told me. She said, I look at the people in Chutz Laretz. I feel so bad for them. They're missing out on so much depth, so much meaning in our lives here. I'll just close with the following words that were part of my speech to my community when I made the decision to make Aliyah. I gave them 3 reasons why I was leaving them and deciding to make Aliyah. I had no jobs in Israel. I didn't even have a job prospect in Israel at the time. But we decided, at the time, my wife and I were 35, if it wasn't Imlo Achshav Ematai, we decided we're going to go for it. And I came back to Baltimore to give a speech about what the different reasons are that we were thinking of leaving, or we're going to make Aliyah. And the third of the 3 reasons that I gave, I quoted the pasuk of the Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to the Shvatim who wanted to stay on Eivrei Yarden. Ha'chechem yavo'u lamilchama va'atem teishu po. Now it could be that Moshe misunderstood the Shvatim, but he thought that they were going to take the easy way out. They weren't going to join their brothers in the fight. And I pointed out then, and I still believe, that question reverberates throughout the generations. That was not a one-time question. That was a question that HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks every Jew who has the chance to live in Israel. Ha'chechem yavo l'milchama va'atem teishu po? You're going to choose not to be in Eretz Yisrael? Now, as powerful as that question is, we see from the story in the Chumash that the answer to that question sometimes is yes. The Shvatim in the end were allowed to live in Eivrei Yarden, as long as they felt they were contributing enough. And there are ways to contribute, to be part of Am Yisrael in Chutz Laretz. I'm not one of the Kanoim or the extremists on this topic. I don't think you're a bad person if you don't make Aliyah. I know plenty of people have that kind of extreme view and guilt everyone. I'm not that way. Making the decision to make Aliyah is very complicated for a lot of people. I understand not always coming. But you have to ask yourself that question. It has to be a good answer. Sometimes there's a good answer. And I said publicly 14 years ago, and I repeat it again, until that point in my life, I thought I had a good answer to that question that legitimated me staying in Chutz Laretz. It reached a point in my own life where I said, I can't justify it anymore. I'm not saying there aren't good answers, but for me, there's no more answers. I have to be in Eretz Yisrael. But I want to add, and with this I conclude, I was being a little bit sloppy in my translation before, deliberately so. The psukim in the conversation between Moshe and the Shvatim wasn't, you want to stay over here while your brothers and sisters go to Israel, make Aliyah? It was much more precise. It was specifically talking about milchama. In other words, what you see from these psukim is that, yes, overarchingly, and we have many makoros, in general, default is, of course, every Jew is supposed to ideally be in Eretz Yisrael. But there's a specific emphasis, an extra importance of being in Eretz Yisrael when ha'achechem yavo'u lamilchama. Now again, I repeat, just like those Shvatim, there are ways to help even when you're not in Eretz Yisrael. And American Jewry, world Jewry has been incredible the last 2 months. Incredible. With their help, their resources, their gifts. There's no question. But at least for us, being part of the majority Shvatim, not the 2.5 or 2 that didn't go, But the 10, the 9.5 who get to go, this is a time more than any other that we should be proud to be here, despite the sacrifices, despite the pain. And I think that this is, at least for me, I don't know if I'm giving any of you chizuk, but just saying this gives me chizuk. So I hope that it helps you as well. But I really feel very strongly that, at least for myself, again, Bli Ayin Hara, Hashem should watch over my children, your grandchildren. Hashem should watch over all of our dedicated and holy and selfless soldiers. And I'm not necessarily on Jen Ehrlich's level. I don't know if I'd be saying the same things she would be, Rachmana Litzlan, if I was in her situation. But at least in my situation, which has plenty of anxiety and fear, like all of you, I feel so clear and so proud at this moment, even more than any other, to be where I am, to be where we are. And I just hope that Akash Baruch Hu should give us all the strength, broadly and specifically our community. We have so much to be proud of. Our community is disproportionately represented on the front lines. Yes, that also means we're disproportionately represented in the deaths. I think it's unquestionably true. I didn't do any studies, but to me it's obvious that there's a disproportionately high number of kippot when you hear the bad news every morning. But that is also a point of pride for us in terms of our overrepresentation, even in the most elite of units. And I could tell you, as someone who, again, as recently as this morning, is going all around the country visiting soldiers, they're not just exhibiting tremendous mesiras nefesh and gvura physically. Why am I there? Why was I on the border of Lebanon today? Why was I on Otef Aza last week? Because they're desperate for Svarim. They want Torah. They don't just want to defeat Hamas. They don't want to just defend us from Hezbollah. They want Minchas Asher al-Mawadim. They want other Sifrei Chizuk, other Sifrei Limud. Ashrei Zachinu, Ashrei Ayin Sharaz Kol Eila. How many Jews would have given everything they had to live in such a generation, to be part of such a movement? We are privileged. The privilege comes with great responsibility and burden. Kadosh Baruch Hu should help all of us to be able to handle and carry that burden. Hashem should bless the soldiers. They should be successful in their mission. We have to eradicate evil. We are mamish living through a Timcha Ezecher Amalek. Hashem should give them the strength to do so decisively, protect all of them, bring them home safely to their loved ones, so that we should all be able to continue doing the wonderful work of building Medina Yisrael, so that this ratios of the Tzmicha of the Geula should hopefully very soon lead to the Geula Shalema.
Thank you so much, Rabbi. Beautiful words and...